From the Len de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 25th day of March, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson, the agricultural weather with Drew Lerner, and hear about early planted soybeans and herbicide damage. Greg Johnson now joins us from TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. Hello, Greg. Thank you much for being with us. Well, the ag community has been waiting for announcements on E10, E15, particularly E15, and the RVOs this week. Expectations still for the RVOs to come before the end of the month. However, today, Lee Zeldin, who is the administrator at EPA, did announce that E15 will be allowed to be used year-round across the nation this summer. That should be a nice boost for ethanol, or at least something that the trade can put a hook on. It may or may not make much of a difference, as mostly, I believe, everybody thought that E15 was going to come. And it has been this way at the very last moment for, well, some time now, like since 2021 or 22. So I don't know if it's a surprise to the market. Probably not, but it is helpful, I suppose.
I would say it's not bullish, but it's supportive. But, you know, we expected this, but the fact that they actually announced it is good. The more important news probably will be the RVO announcement if we do get it on Friday. But that's what the trade is expecting, is to hear some kind of an announcement on Friday concerning the RVOs. And that probably would have more of an impact potentially on prices than this waiver, because this is just what we've done for the last 5 years, or this 4 years. This will be the fifth year now that we've waived the requirements so that we're allowed to sell E15 in the summertime. So supportive, but not bullish, I would say.
And it is important to note that the Biden administration and the Trump administration following through, starting last April, has made a commitment to the 8 states in the Midwest that E15 would be available year-round anyway. So this expands that out to the rest of the nation. Now let's talk about what's been happening in the marketplace. Yesterday was quiet. Today seems as if it was quiet, too. Is that the case?
Yeah, it is. It's very quiet. Everybody's all eyes are on the Middle East and oil prices. It seems like corn and soybeans take their cue from how the crude oil prices are doing for the most part. Corn's up 9% since the Middle East conflict started. Beans are up 8% since then. That sounds all well and good until you look at the fact that diesel prices are up 40% since the war started and urea prices are up 42%. So the corn and bean prices are higher, but not enough to offset the input cost for the most part. So I guess we'll take what we get. The market is following the Middle East war. If we do get a ceasefire, that which is the rumor for today, that's got oil prices lower. But it seems like the news out of the Middle East changes about every other day. So until we see something actually documented and verified, it just seems like everybody's got an opinion and the market is up one day, down the next. Uncertain as to which direction to take with all trading seemingly based off of headlines that are being released.
As the diesel fuel prices were coming up, and I don't often talk to you about diesel, but I'm wondering whether when you were having discussions with farmers, had they booked their diesel needs for the spring planting season?
A lot of them have, yes. And fortunately for us, a lot of them have locked in their fertilizer needs too. But I think there are a lot of areas that did not. I don't know what percent that is. Maybe a quarter to a third did not get those inputs locked in. And that kind of leads me and others to believe, too, that maybe that corn acreage number might be a little bit lower than what we were thinking earlier. There was a lot of 94 to 95 million acre corn talk. That might be a little bit lower than that. It might be closer to the 94, and maybe, there's an outside chance of even seeing 93. I don't know if that would be reflected in this March 31 acreage report next Tuesday, because they took that survey, around the 1st of March, and maybe at that point farmers were still planning on planting corn. But if they've gone to their input suppliers and found out where the prices are, They may have to think twice about planting as much corn as what they originally had thought.
And the Bloomberg survey is out for those estimates, and the analysts are at 94.17 million acres for corn and 85.57 for soybeans. Of course, the report is due out on Tuesday next week. That's March the 31st. We'll be talking about that. Yesterday, I was in a meeting in the afternoon, a pre-meeting for tomorrow's webinar from the Farm Dog team, as I'll be hosting it, about the price of fertilizer as well as diesel fuel. And I think, well, I know for a fact that mostly the concern appears now not to be quite about the springtime, diesel fuel for spring, but for the fall, because anhydrous ammonia prices don't tend to come down all that quickly. And I think there's a great deal of concern about the 2027 crop. Have farmers talked to you about that too?
Not too many have looked that far ahead. I mean, I think they're concerned about it, but obviously everyone's hopeful that we get the Middle East situation resolved by then. But for the 26 crop, it takes 30 to 40 days to get diesel fuel, oil, fertilizer, what have you, move from through the Strait of Hormuz to the Gulf of New Orleans, and then a few more days to get it up the river. So, number one, we're worried about price, but number two, we may be worried about availability. If it's not available, for 45 to 60 days, that might be a little too late for some people. So, a lot of concerns out there as far as input prices and availability.
Chuck Spencer from GrowMark FS will be on. You'll be familiar with him through TGM, along with some folks from the National Corn Growers Association, Gary Schnitke and Nick Paulson, tomorrow as well. And they posted to the FarmDoc Daily website yesterday an article about this. And a fairly simple model that they have been using since 2016 that tracks things very well. And they really are pretty concerned that nitrogen prices will be high. It'll be important for everybody, I think, to tune in for that one to get yourself registered. You can go to farmdocdaily.illinois.edu to do that. What else should we be following in the marketplace at this point, or have you been thinking about?
Well, I think the market has frozen a lot of people into doing nothing with all the ups and downs and back and forth. It's easy to just say, well, I'll just wait till tomorrow and hope the news changes. But keep in mind that these prices can come down. Gold has dropped 13% since the war started. Silver has dropped 22%. The Dow is down 5% since the war started and 8% overall. So a 13 or 20% drop in corn and bean prices would be huge. And so I guess I just want to remind people that, the war has added some price improvement to corn and beans. But if, if this settles down, we could see prices drop. And, we're over $11 on soybeans, and we're getting close to $5 on new crop corn on the board. So those, people can say that inputs are higher and we need more money than that to break even, but these definitely are prices that are higher than we've seen in quite some time, and farmers may want to think long and hard about maybe getting something locked in at a minimum and locking in some of these prices.
On that note, we thank you for taking time with us again today.
Hey, thank you, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Greg Johnson is with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. Just one quick news item and a reminder for the day. The Ag Economist at the University of Illinois are cautioning the impact of the Iran war could cause the price of fall nitrogen to remain high. Using a simple statistical model relating anhydrous ammonia prices to corn and natural gas prices through time, the FarmDoc team projects anhydrous in the state of Illinois this coming fall to average $860 a ton. Now, higher prices are likely to continue even if the conflict ends soon due to the persistence of price shocks. In an article posted to the FarmDoc Daily website, the U of I Ag Economist note fall 2026 prices could be much higher, exceeding $1,000, particularly if the Iran conflict continues. The team will host a free webinar on the price of fertilizers and diesel fuel tomorrow at 11 a.m. Central Time. Registration is free and online right now under the Webinars and Events tab at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. From the Ag Economist, let's go to the Crop Scientist, where the University of Illinois Herbicide Evaluation Group has been investigating potential issues with herbicide premixes and pre-plant herbicides when used on early planted soybeans. Early planting dates for the study have been between April 15th and 18th, while May planting dates have been around May 15th to the 18th. The conclusion is fairly simple. PPO herbicides do cause damage, but as you'll hear, as long as stand counts are not severely reduced, there is little evidence of yield impact. U of I research specialist Logan Miller, under the direction of Extension Weed Scientist Aaron Hager, has been carrying out the experiment.
One of the main projects we're working with is looking at evaluating several different herbicide premixes or pre-herbicides just to see if, especially in that early plant environment, certain ones are more likely to cause crop injury, more excessive levels of crop injury, and then also maybe possibly stand loss that could result or translate to soybean yield loss. That's really the biggest concern, just given that in those early planting conditions, their environment usually is less favorable for early season soybean growth. And so maybe given that longer time to soybean emergence may increase that duration of exposure of the soybean or seedlings to those herbicides under less favorable conditions, more stressful conditions, that could result in maybe higher levels of injury and stand loss compared to a more conventional planting date.
Was it the different herbicides, or was it the weather and the environment that made a bigger difference?
They kind of go hand in hand, of course. We need the precipitation to incorporate those herbicides, so if we don't get that, not going to see anything. But so I would say the limiting factor is the weather, just because also if you do have excessive rainfall, that's going to put more stress on that crop early in the season. But then also certain herbicides are more likely to cause injury, certain premixes that contain certain active ingredients, so that's also a pretty important factor as well. It's kind of hard to put one above the other, but if I had to pick, I'd say weather.
Which premixes or herbicides were more likely to show some noticeable issues early in the season?
The ones that are most likely to or have caused most injury were PPO-based premixes. So contain the classic chemistry that is the group 14 herbicides. So most farmers are pretty familiar with these authority-based products, fierce-based products. And so those are the ones that have stuck out, resulting in the greatest amount of crop injury. And also Zidropro is another one. Also contains a PPO herbicide that we've seen more so stunting with that product past couple of years compared to the other ones, but those are the big ones.
Were there PPOs herbicides that did better than others?
Preview and Prefix were the two that stood out. So Prefix is one that is not really viewed as a pre-herbicide, I would argue, more of a foliar or post-herbicide in soybean, just given that it has Flexstar Fumesfin in it as the active PPO herbicide in it. And that's more of a knockdown herbicide, not really known for residual control. We didn't really see any injury with that one. But then as for Preview, it contains metribuzin and then also sulfentrazone. And that sulfentrazone component is also in your authority products. So that's been a staple in pre-herbicide control in soybean for a few decades now. And that one we didn't see hardly Preview any injury in relative to the non-tree control, which differed compared to those authority products and like Fierce and Kyber. We definitely saw higher levels of injury with those products compared to Preview and Prefix. So it could be for a couple reasons. Fierce products contain flumioxazin, which is a different active ingredient, but still PPO herbicide. And so it could be maybe the AI on, depending on the year, maybe more likely to cause injury. But most likely it's just also because the products differ in the amount of actual pounds of active ingredient that they have. So, for example, also like Broadax, it has less sulfentrazone in it compared to, say, an Authority Edge or Authority First. And so that also could be playing a role in the amount of injury that we're seeing.
Do take up metribuzin for me. How did it fare in the study?
In terms of the premixes with metribuzin, we didn't see like any crop response. And then when we had it just looked at it alone, here in Champaign, we did look at it at 12 ounces of dry metribuzin. And then at our Western Illinois site last year in Pike County, it's a little bit of a lighter soil. So we dropped the rate a little bit down to just over 10 and a half ounces of dry metribuzin. And regardless of the rate there at the site, we didn't see any crop response. I would say you get above 8 ounces, that's you know, definitely in that 10 to 12 ounce range, that's a pretty robust rate. And so that was encouraging to see that we didn't see any crop response, at least last year, with that higher rate of metribuzin or stand loss.
Well, you looked at herbicides. You also looked at seed treatments like Ilevo. Did you see any damage there or find anything of interest?
So we also evaluated Ilevo versus non-Ilevo treated seed. So all the seed had a base seed treatment, but then we added in the Ilevo as well as a factor. And so the first year of the study, we did see significant stand loss from that Ilevo seed treatment, regardless of what the pre-herbicide was here in Champaign. And also across both planting dates, but we did not see any yield loss or reduction in that May planting date or a conventional planting date, but in the early planting date, we did see an 11 bushel yield loss or reduction when including Ilevo, which likely just also has to do with the weather conditions that occurred following planting in that May planting date that were less favorable again for growth, because we did see, when also just evaluating that May planting date, we saw a significant stand reduction compared to the early, which is kind of opposite what one would expect. But this past year, or last year in 2025, we didn't really see much of the crop response from Ilevo compared to the first year, and we also didn't see any stand loss. And then looking at the yield data, we saw one in the no-till environment early planted, we saw a yield reduction of about 4 bushels, and then the tillage environment, we saw a yield gain by having Ilevo versus not of about 4 bushels, 5 bushels. And then that May planting date, we didn't see any difference. So it was more of an inconsistent effect last year compared to the first year of the study.
And finally, any conclusions on the yield or the crop recovery from the damage and what difference it might have made? I think you talked about stand counts as well.
When it comes to looking at the pre-herbicides and any concern for yield loss, there wasn't any really reason to be concerned, just given the soybean stand counts that we did collect later on in the season. And then, of course, the yield data, despite there being varying levels of crop response or crop injury from those pre-herbicides, the yield data didn't show any negative effect. And then, you know, really, you know, as long as we're looking at about 100,000 seeds per acre, some would argue even less, maybe 70,000 to 80,000 seeds per acre, we're sitting pretty good for not having to be concerned about soybean yield loss so long that is a uniform stand. And we had that. So despite some of those lower levels of maybe stand reduction from some of those PPO herbicides, they did not directly influence yield or cause yield loss.
Logan Miller is a research specialist in the Department of Crop Sciences at the University of Illinois and a member of the Herbicide Evaluation Group. If you'd like to learn more, check out the webinar and or podcast at ISA's fieldadvisor.org website. It is titled, Which Pre-Herbicides Increase Injury Risk in Early Planted Soybeans? Let's take a look at the weather forecast now. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Let's stay in the United States, I think, today, Drew. It is the hard red winter wheat crop that seems to be of concern. Lay out why, what conditions are like at the moment, and how you see things developing.
Yeah, you know, the crop went in really well last year. That's a big plus. But conditions over the winter were certainly less than ideal, and it has progressively become more and more harsh for that crop. In the winter, we, especially in late January, early February, we had a three-day period where temperatures were hovering around zero or below it. We were at night well below zero, and during the afternoons, we got to the positive single digits. But all of that occurred without snow on the ground. And that was a long enough period of time that we probably did a little damage to the crop. I don't think we killed it necessarily, but there may be some signs of winter kill out there as well. But I think the biggest thing on my mind is that we injured the crop. Now, we came along into late February and into into March, and we saw a nice warm-up take place. The crop was stimulated a little bit at times, and we came into March, and we saw the warmer air coming around as well. And so we got the crop to wake up, and it started developing. helping in some areas, and then we whacked it with that big freeze of March 14th through the 16th, where the temperatures again fell down close to zero. And in snow-free areas of Kansas, Colorado, and Nebraska, and that further raised another flag that the crop might not have done well. Now, again, I don't think we killed the crop, but we didn't do anything to help it. In the meantime, it hasn't precipitated in that region. And anytime you damage a wheat plant, it can easily recover. It just needs to have wet and cool weather over a couple of 2 or 3 weeks in order for tillers to be set again. And but the thing that's been missing is the rain. We just aren't getting any precipitation out there. And that extreme cold that occurred March 14th through the 16th was immediately followed by, instead of cold and wet conditions, by temperatures in the 90s to near 100 degrees. And that is what I am most concerned with after injuring the crop. It's just the absolute opposite of what that crop needs to get back on track. And we've added more to that today. It's going to be in the 80s and 90s out there in the plains. And we're going to see it again early next week, probably Sunday through Tuesday, with 80 degree readings at least. And it's not going to rain at all in these areas for at least another full week, and probably for 10 days. And when it does rain, it's going to be very erratic and light. So there is definite reason here to be concerned about the crop. You know, we don't have too many years like this where we don't get an opportunity for the crop to revive itself. And I think this is the scenario we've seen so far is certainly not on track for making that crop better.
Here in the Midwest, farmers will be getting the itch because it's been pretty nice. I actually did see a field cultivator running a couple of days ago. Oh, and I mowed my grass yesterday because it was green and growing and frankly actually needed mowing, which was odd. In the month of March, but we need rainfall as well. Will we get some?
Yeah, we're going to see a change next week. The first week of April, we're going to bring some moisture into the Midwest. We are going to heat it up too. Probably mid to late week next week will be notably warm biased across the region for a period of 5 days or so. So yeah, I think we're going to firm the soil a little bit between now and then. We're going to warm it up definitely next week, and then we're going to add a little bit of moisture. And I think the bottom line is going to be a really good mix, and we'll be able to get into some of these fields on time for the start of the planting season. So I think it looks pretty good right now. I'm not promising it's going to stay that way. And certainly the northwest part of the corn and soybean producing areas are probably going to keep a little drier bias for a while longer. So that area up there, they may get planted quickly, but they're going to cry for some moisture after a while.
Thanks much, Drew. We'll talk with you again next week.
You bet. Have a good one.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.